F5. The Practical Implications of the Spiritual Structure of the Gospel of St. John. Number 1A.
All right. We have as our subject for this week, we have the structure of the Gospel of St. John. But as I announced it in the summer school prospectus, we will not really go through that Gospel of St. John again the way we did last year, but rather we want to see the implications that we can get out of that St. John and out of the structure of St. John so as to see the practical aspect of it. Now, this gives me also the opportunity to touch on some of the main and fundamental issues in Christian Science, especially the issues that are uppermost in our thought in the world of today. I start out with crisis. We all know that the world is in a state of crisis. Everybody is talking about crisis. Every continent is in a state of crisis. Every country is in a state of crisis. And so we have to see what is a crisis and how is our attitude towards it. So we are at the point of a transition, because a crisis is always a point of transition where we leave an old concept behind and are not yet ready to accept a new one, usually because we don't know what the new one is. We just have first to find out and sense out what the new paradigm will be. So within that transitionary stage, we always feel that the crisis is going on. And we know also from the point of view of the 1,000-year periods that we are approaching the end of the 6,000-year period and are bridging over to the 7,000-year period. And therefore, that means that somehow we have to see what has brought us up to the 6,000-year period and what are the demands of the next 1,000-year period. That is something we have been thinking about quite a lot, and you know my booklet, which I really recommend again and again and again to investigate, that little booklet on the breakthrough to the next millennium. I really would like if every student would be very familiar with that booklet, because it would help to see where we are today and what we think is in front of us, so that we can make the transition from 1,000-year period to the next 1,000-year period more in a harmonious way instead of in the way of a crisis. And so as partakers of this age, which is a wonderful age, we just said at the dining table, it's really the best century to live in since time immemorial. It's so exciting, this century, but it demands also a lot of us in the way of being flexible enough to change our structure of consciousness. Now, a crisis, as we have seen in earlier seminars, means also chance. That apparently, I don't know Chinese, apparently the Chinese has only one word for crisis and for chance. They could see so easily that every crisis is something positive and not something negative. And this is the point I want to stress today very clearly, that we don't consider a crisis as something negative, but as something very positive. It's something very positive because it shows that something is moving in the world, in consciousness, that an old paradigm is giving way to a new paradigm, that the Christ idea is pushing and pushing and pushing and wants us to accept a new paradigm. We are not yet quite sure what that new paradigm, not yet quite familiar with that new paradigm, but still we have to see that behind it is the Christ idea, that Christ idea of which St. John is speaking so marvelously. So the big question, really, where are we right now? Where are we? From where did we come? To where are we going? And this is a great question. And we cannot say well, that doesn't really concern me. I'm a man, is a living island. I live all by myself. I'm interested just in my well-being, so that I'm well, that I'm bodily well, that I'm businesslike well, and all the rest of the world is of no importance to me. This is an attitude which we perhaps one had over all the centuries and up to now, always to be concerned about oneself and putting oneself in the middle of the universe. And certainly today we begin to see that this is a wrong attitude, that really a new Copernican revolution is taking place, namely to put the whole into the center and always see the individual place of each one as a place within the whole. And this is so important. Looking over many decades of being in Christian Science and seeing what happens with patients and so on, I could always see, and that was one of my starting points really, that I could see that people, that there are certain students that have a problem, and when they solve the problem, the next thing they begin to see is that they have another problem. And then they try to solve that problem, and the next thing is that they wake up the next day and they have another problem. They have problem, 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 problem. And I have always seen that at the ground, at the basis of this experience is one thing, that people are looking after isolated things, that they are small-minded. By small-minded, I mean that they are never thinking big about the big things. That if we are engaging our consciousness in the wholeness of being and are concerned with the big issues of being, that the small things adjust themselves quite easily, that the small things not even arise or they don't take on a great importance. You know, it's my old saying from the Bible, Jesus said that they are blind guides which filter out a gnat and swallow a camel. Well, that's from the Aramaic Bible. You know that the English St. James Bible says that they strain at the gnat and swallow camels. This is exactly the consciousness that we have to overcome, that the situation of the world of today is that we are living now in one world, no more in isolated parts of the world, that the economy, the finance, the politics, the military situation, everything, the ecological situation, is always a worldwide problem and never a local problem. And therefore, in our consciousness, we should see that we also go along this evolution, make that transition from thinking always in small items, always egotistically, instead of taking in the big, big picture. So where are we now? That would mean, as a first result, I would say that we should see that we try to live along the order of being as it presents itself today, namely along that order of getting away from the smallness of being, the smallness of thinking, to the big thinking, to thinking big, to think universally. We still can act locally. That's one of the renderings one hears today, to think universally and act locally, so that the whole is really determining the isolated part, or not the isolated part, but the part of the whole. We know that if we are not in line with this development, then we are fallen out of order. Medical people today say, well, disease is nothing else but to fall out of divine order. So, and this is so true that if we do not go along the development of the spiritual idea, that then we are going against the spiritual idea, and that means to go against the Christ idea. And then we knock our head on the wall. We fall on our nose. And then we say, here is a crisis. So this is just introducing what I want to say. in various ways. I wanted to take over the next few hours various parameters to show where we are today, from where we came and where we are and to where we are going. Well, the biggest and largest parameter is this, that is the whole evolution of our universe. Well, everybody knows that by now about this evolution, but still I want to repeat it quickly as possible in order to fill the picture properly from every angle. What is evolution? And where are we now in that evolution? And we know that in evolution we witness an exponential growth, that things get quicker and quicker and quicker as the years goes on. Well, what is the big picture? You know that the theory at the moment is that 15 billion years ago, roundabout, there was the Big Bang. That was the beginning of the material universe. That Big Bang theory, which is questioned today from various angles, that's right, that's okay. But then they can see that at the beginning there were just forces at work. So atomic evolution took place. And so we have first the evolution of the atomic universe of forces. Then it took about 10 billion years for the Earth as a material Earth to be evolving. So from the forces we have an evolution to matter. A material universe was coming into being with all the suns and galaxies and so on, all the celestial bodies made out of matter. Then we begin to witness already the first sign of the exponential growth. It didn't take any more 10 billion years for another paradigm shift. It only needed 1 billion years for the material universe to evolve material life, organic matter. So we had the first organic cells which developed and evolved as you know, through the evolution of life. To that point, really, that after another period of round about another 3 billion years, we have the evolution of what is called consciousness, or man. Let's first say man. The first man, about 3 million years ago, this has been detected only a few years ago. So it has taken as long as that, you see, from 50 billion to only 3 million years for man to be formed, first man. So you can see that if we are today talking about man, we can see that this is only something that happened just yesterday, just a while ago. That is not something that is a final state. Then from that point on, from this Homo erectus, as it was called at that time, there passed again about 3 million years until we had Homo sapiens, you know, the Neanderthal. Can you know him, the Neanderthal man, the Homo habilis, who used tools. That was a great step forward. And then another perhaps 50,000 years to the Homo sapiens sapiens. They call him sapiens sapiens, twice sapiens, because it was that man that was here about 30,000 years ago and started somehow a new evolution, namely the evolution of consciousness. So we have come from atomic forces to matter, from matter to organic life, from organic life to man, then the various degrees of man, and then the evolution of consciousness. And we are in that stage of the evolution of consciousness today. So we don't know what the next evolution will be. We only have to realize that we are in a period of evolution of consciousness, where consciousness is the main point, not the atomic forces, not matter, not organic life, but consciousness is the main point. And therefore, if we are going along with evolution, we have to see that consciousness is evolving, that we put our stress on that very point. And so after that evolving of consciousness, we came into a smaller, more recent evolution, the evolution of civilization, which usually started, according to the historians, around about 4000 BC, so that those 6,000-year periods are behind us, and we have just 1,000-year period left in front of us, and we are at the verge of going into that 7,000-year period. Now, when we are asking what is civilization all about, then we make a quite interesting, we see something very interesting, namely that most people of what we would call the forward thinkers, the great thinkers, the big thinkers of today, they all have one thing in view, that they say we have investigated the evolution and have come to the conclusion that we are at the point where everything evolves towards spirit, that we are at the verge of a spiritual revolution, where the spiritual revolution takes the main place in evolution, and no more so much the forces, the atomic forces, matter and organic life and human body and so on. So that the future that is in front of us is seen or felt, I would say so, perhaps at the first moment, as being the future of the one spirit. Now, this is saying a lot, and I will come back to that point through other parameters and show that they all verge into that focal point of spirit. So today we are in that transitionary period where we don't know what comes after man. We just have to know really that the man, as we consider it humanly and in the universe, is a transitionary stage. It's not the crown of creation, but is a form that is on a transitionary level, and that there is an evolution going on that will lead us into quite a different field and into a different direction. What is that direction, and why do we feel that, or does the world feel that the future is in the spiritual field? Well, if we ask today thinking people that, or if we listen at the TV, at the radio, if we read in the newspaper, one thing is standing out that seems to be uppermost in the thinkers of today, be it of the politicians, be it of the military people, or of the people of finance and economy. They all say two things. They all say we need a new world order. You have certainly heard world order, new world order, there needs a new world order, the old world order doesn't is no more sufficient, that doesn't work anymore. A new world order, and you can hear order. The second thing which one hears over and over and over is that all these politicians and leading people demand a new way of thinking. So the thinking must find a new way. They don't know yet quite what that new way is, therefore they can't give a final answer to it. They feel their way. It's nice to see that. They feel their way, that perhaps that new way of thinking should be more universal, should be less egotistical, and so on. So they know that something has to be done without yet being able to give a answer. Now, within that framework of the 7,000-year period, in order to take that parameter of the 7,000-year period, we see that we are at the verge from the 6th to the 7th, so to say, towards the end of the 7,000-year period. If the 1,000-year period had a beginning, they must have an end. If they started with the first 1,000-year period, way back with creation, and we have followed that through the various stages through the Bible and have seen that they developed according to the world order, according to mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and now we are at the verge to coming into the last, into the seventh, into the last 1,000 period, we must also think what comes afterwards, so that we can see intelligently that something very, very different is awaiting the evolution, is awaiting us, and that is round the corner, and we have to sniff out what is there round the corner, so that we can feel, how can I go along with that development. Yes, well, Mrs. Edin actually gives an answer. She says that after this 7,000-year period, we will be ushered into the millennium, into that which comes after the 7,000 period, and which she defines that millennium as the spiritualization of thought. And so that would usher in the millennium. So again, in Mrs. Eddy's writing, we can see that if she looks into the future, she can define really the development of the future and says what is necessary is not the development of the body, not the development that man has another body or that there are other species and so on, but that the development is spiritward, spiritualization of thought. Well, we feel perhaps that the very opposite is going on in the world, because we feel there is only one crisis after the other, one bigger than the other, and so we have also to see clearly that is a law, that we don't feel that the crisis is something that is outside the order or outside law, that it shouldn't happen, that that is something evil, that that is something bad, but we should be able to analyze it to the point where we see what is actually happened behind the scenes. What is actually happened behind the scenes? Well, Isaiah already had that problem. He said, I make peace and create evil. He gives a sense that the Lord God Almighty says, I make peace, I give peace, and I create evil. Isaiah, who was really a monotheist, he really was, he had a spiritual monism, depicts that spiritual monism from two sides. From one side that it makes peace, and on the other side that very peace really makes evil. And Jesus said that he brought peace and the sword. It seems to be a contradiction, it seems to be dualism that he's teaching, that Isaiah and Jesus in these two verses are teaching dualism. And naturally this is not true. We know that intuitively that that is not true, that there must be an answer to this very point of crisis. And Mrs. Eddy gives a very clear answer and explanation of that very thing. Just two statements which she gives. She says that this means that divine law are stirring up the belief in evil to the utmost, so it's the divine law that stirs up evil to the utmost, when bringing it to the surface and reducing it to its common denominator, nothingness. So we can see that behind the crisis, that stirring up of the belief and coming to the front, is nothing else but the divine law at work. It's the divine law at work that does not allow evil to exist, that does everything in order to overcome evil, in order to reduce evil to its native nothingness. Or another statement which is so illustrative for this, where Mrs. Eddy says in miscellaneous writings, by the law of opposites, after the truth of man has been demonstrated, well, what afterwards? You feel if the truth of man has been demonstrated, there should be one harmony. She says, the postulate of error must appear. Not only appears, but must appear. Again, we can see here how Mrs. Eddy explains, really, that which we usually consider to be a crisis is never a crisis. Is in a deeper sense the stirring of the Christ idea that wants to push forward, wants to push towards its telefinalistic aim, namely to be spirit, and therefore on pushing forward, that spiritual idea will bring from undercover that what has been hidden undercover and brings it to the surface. For what? In order that it is overcome and that it is brought back to nothingness. So this is really the what is going on today in the world.